mercies of gravity. This is Queen's Gambit. What happened next? A Star Wars prequel trilogy not fic, written by Bedlam's Bard and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated R and contains the pairing Padme Amidala, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, with additional tags for alternate universe canon divergence, war, mentions of violence, mindfuckery, mind rape, inappropriate use of the Force, the Jedi Council's full of fuckwits, dubious morality, not fic, dangling plot threads, kidnapping. Quinlan Vos deserves better.
Stretched to the core of galaxies, distorted city crates, by a black hole of vanity, blossoms the age of greed. Beyond the lows of density, towers of glass and steel, temples and fragments of memories, drifting away from me. I'm ready to start.
It has been well over a year, and I finally finished writing this. I'm really sorry, guys. I have no idea why it took so long. Here's how Dark Bishop and Nightfall, the second two books of the theoretical Gambitverse trilogy, would have gone. Queen's Gambit is structured somewhat oddly because it was written and plotted to fill two distinct and contradictory positions. The second book in one trilogy, the Ouroboros series, and the first book in another trilogy, the theoretical Gambitverse series. The universe in the Gambitverse existed before the Wake characters arrived. It will continue to exist now that they've gone. The story hasn't concluded, and for that reason, there are a number of plot threads that weren't tied up, or that were introduced near the end of Gambit, because they were intended to lead into the second and third books. I promised that when Gambit had finished, I would write up the events that I knew of in the second and third books, Dark Bishop and Nightfall, respectively. There's a good chance that this says more about the way I plot and write than it does about what was actually intended to occur in the remainder of the trilogy. I usually write to and around what I call keystone scenes, flashes of visuals, or occasionally dialogue, that stand out for me. They don't always end up in the story in its final form, but using them is often what I'm structuring the plot around. I didn't do extensive plot work on Dark Bishop and Nightfall, since I knew I wasn't going to be writing either one, but I do know a handful of the keystone scenes and plot threads in each one. Queen's Gambit opens with Queen Amidala essentially occupying Count Dooku's canonical position as head of the Confederacy. It ends with her in Leia's position at the end of A New Hope, as a queen in exile, though still head of the Confederacy, at least in name. In some ways, Gambit was supposed to be kind of a fake-out. The basic setup implies that it's going to be a takeoff of the prequel trilogy The Clone Wars, but the bait and switch at the end, the introduction of Palpatine's new galactic empire, is to actually set it up as a mirror to the original trilogy, a thread meant to be carried through the second and third books. Exact parallel? By no means. But it was something I was thinking about.
After the gates of prophecies, a million light years away from me, straight for the eye of destiny, reaching the point of tears.
Book 2, Dark Bishop.
Love dies silently, torn to the flesh as the fire bleeds, echoes of history.
As the story opens, on Naboo, Rex, Alpha, Iote, Stas, Ellie, and two other Naboo clones prepare to break into the Republic-occupied palace in order to tap into the communications hotlines. During this, Rex discovers that the Gambitverse Rex, a lieutenant in this universe, is deployed to Naboo on the Republic side. Upon the team's return to the safe house, they find that Captain Kenobi's elite special forces unit, the unit, has arrived. They were on a training mission when the invasion occurred. Their commander? No one other than the Gambitverse Cody, who puts a blaster to Rex's head. On Coruscant, Dooku finds out that he's being impeached by the Senate, some of whom are claiming that he's violated the Rusan Reformation by holding political office while still being a Jedi. Great! Now he gets to go on trial for that. Meanwhile, the Republic is still kind of falling apart. Mace Windu is on his way to Dathomir, still trying to figure out who the Sith Assassin is. The Jedi Order is having major problems. They're tentatively at an impasse, because they were about 5 minutes away from schisming before the Sith Lord and the Senate news dropped, and they're not sure how to come back from that. Especially given some of the things that went down in the Council Chamber. Like the Temple Guard refusing to take orders they considered illegitimate, and the call for Yoda to step down as Grand Master. Also, the part where they tried to arrest Plo Koon. At this point, everyone is pretending that none of this happened, but what is actually going on is that Mace is trying to run the entire Jedi Order on his own, because he is the closest to a neutral party there is. It also means that he only trusts a handful of Jedi to actually get stuff done. This is why he's going to Dathomir himself, and why Deepa and Caleb are going to Naboo. Rignima is being brought back to Coruscant. Because everyone else in her cohort defected, the Order doesn't feel that she's safe to have in the field. Deepa Balaba and Caleb Doom are on their way to Naboo on Mace's orders to figure out what the hell is going on. Cody, who knows every member of the unit, doesn't recognize Rex, and assumes that he's a Republic spy. Motier and Irte end up breaking the, "Hey, this guy is from an alternate universe," news. This is a scene that was initially intended to be in Queen's Gambit, with Alpha instead of Cody. Back with the Naboo First Fleet, Ani Skywalker is modifying Barisafi's cybernetic leg, and they're bonding by bitching about how much they hated Wake Anakin. Let us pause to consider the existential weirdness of Anakin Skywalker and Barisafi being friends. Ahsoka is still having major problems with her fighter squadron, who don't appreciate taking orders from a teenage Jedi. Amidala's position in the Confederacy has been undermined by losing Naboo, and by the confrontation in the Congress and Palpatine's treason. A lot of the other Confederate planets are wary about having Jedi besides Captain Kenobi on their side. There's more fighting about the control of the troops and navy, who are all bought and paid for by the Naboo. Slight problem. The Naboo in exile no longer have access to the funds they used to pay for the troops and navy. The money came from the plasma mining that the Trade Federation had started during the occupation, and which continued under Queen Amidala. Now the Republic is occupying Naboo, and they don't have access to all their accounts anymore, though some of it was in Offworld Holdings. Tarkin has been made governor of occupied Naboo. He installs a young puppet queen, Apailana, to destabilize Amidala's position, and legitimize his own position in the eyes of the Naboo population. Thrasa and Tholm don't appear at all in this book, though their absence is notable and commented on by both the Jedi and the Renegade Jedi. While Luminara, Quinlan, and Ahsoka eventually fit into the Naboo First Fleet and fighting forces reasonably well, though it takes a while, Barriss becomes more and more uncomfortable with the position she's found herself in. It's not at all what she thought she was signing up for when she snuck away to rescue Luminara. At some point, Obi-Wan and Amidala seduce Ani, who's surprised, but more than happy to be seduced. Tarkin is not pleased by having Deepa and Caleb arrive on Naboo, especially since, because they're not operating as part of the Republic military on Worlds, they're not in his chain of command. Deepa sets about trying to figure out what happened with Stas Alley and where she is, while Caleb makes friends with clones. The Naboo Resistance is in fine form, and Tarkin hates them. The situation on Naboo is rapidly worsening, and a lot of the Jedi on world are uncomfortable with Tarkin's policies, as is the Puppet Queen. Mace travels to Dathomir to try and find out what's up with the Sith who tried to assassinate Dooku, and gets Asajj Ventress's name as a result. I never did figure out what the newly formed empire was up to at this point in time, but there is actively fighting going on between them, the Confederacy, and the Republic, and the various planetary confederations that split off from the Republic at the time of Gambit. It's a huge mess all around. At some point near the beginning of the back third of the story, Ayla and Quinlan run into each other. Ayla demands that Quinlan come with her and turn himself into the Council. When he refuses, they duel. And because he hesitates at the last moment, she manages to knock him out and brings him back to the temple to stand trial. Mace is torn between trying to sort out the Order and tracking Ventress, but the Order seems to be temporarily stable at the moment, so he opts for the latter, since a Sith on the loose is a big deal. He follows her to Naboo and joins up with Deepa and Caleb, who are still trying to figure out what the hell is going on, and ends up butting heads with Tarkin. The Gungans really hate both the Naboo and the Republic occupation, and are making trouble with everyone. The plotline about the Gungan feelings about the Naboo in the wake of the Trade Federation occupation unfortunately never made it into Gambit. The Resistance is trying to talk to them, so are the Jedi. Unfortunately, so is the Empire, which has been poking thoughtfully around Naboo. This leads to a confrontation between Asajj Ventress, Deepa Balaba, and Caleb Doom that ends with Deepa being knocked out. Mace catches up to Deepa in time to pick Deepa up off the ground as she spits, "She took my Padawan!" Quinlan's arrest is pretty close to the final straw for Barriss, who has been doing a lot of soul-searching and has concluded that she is not happy with the situation whatsoever. She leaves a holo for Luminara, telling her that she needs some time alone to sort this out, and then takes off. Quinlan stands trial for treason. The Council goes through with what they meant to do with Obi-Wan, and uses Revan's cure on him, to Ayla's absolute horror. Ahsoka fails to return from what should have been an easy solo mission, but because it's at the same time as Barriss's departure, Luminara and Obi-Wan assume that they left together. Because of the Confederacy's current troubles, they have to renegotiate their contract with Kamino, so Kenobi, Amidala, and Ani travel there to do so. This turns out to be a trap! Kenobi and Amidala manage to escape, but Ani is captured, possibly by Jango Fett or Cad Bane. Remember, he's still wanted by the Hutts as an escaped slave. Final scene. Ahsoka wakes up imprisoned in an unfamiliar starship along with Caleb, and they are confronted by no less than Asajj Ventress. Ahsoka woke to darkness and a hand on her sleeve, a boy's urgent voice whispering, "Padawan Tano, Padawan Tano, please wake up, please." "I'm awake," Ahsoka said, groping blindly until she struck what felt like a thin shoulder. It took a moment for her eyes to adjust. Togruta dark vision wasn't as good as Twi'lek dark vision, but it was still better than a human's. And when it finally did, she saw that the speaker was a slim human boy a few years younger than her, still round-cheeked with youth. He was crouching beside her, the sleeves of his slightly too large cloak falling forward over his hands as he helped her up. "Caleb Doom?" she said, after a moment of doubt. He was probably the most junior Padawan in the Order, or had been when she had left, and she didn't know him well. He nodded. "Are you all right?" Ahsoka rubbed a hand over the back of her head, but she couldn't find any lumps. She must have been stunned. "Yeah, where are we?" "We're on a ship." He backed away from her, wrapping the folds of his cloak around himself. "Where's your master?" Caleb shook his head. "Not here." Ahsoka got up, leaning on his shoulder for support, and looked around. They were in what could charitably be called a cage, bars all around them except for the back wall. When she went to the door to peer out through the bars, she saw that it was the same in either direction, long ranks of cages lining a narrow aisle. All of them were empty. She looked back at Caleb, who was sitting cross-legged on the dirty floor and watching her warily. "What happened to you? How did you get here?"
"My master and I were on Naboo with Master Windu," he said. "Because of..."
He paused, his eyes narrowing, and Ahsoka said encouragingly, "It's all right. Who am I going to tell?" He plucked at the hem of his cloak.
"There's suspicion in the Order that there are more traitors like Master Ali. And with so many Jedi on Naboo, Master Windu didn't trust anyone to investigate but my master. He'd only just gotten there. We were out in the swamps, and I'm not sure what happened. We got separated, and she was there."
"Master Balaba?"
He shook his head.
"Her."
He licked his lips. "I saw her before, back on Coruscant, when she tried to kill the Chancellor." Ahsoka felt a chill that had nothing to do with the temperature. She turned at a step on the metal floor outside the cage, Caleb scrambling to his feet beside her and putting a hand to the place on his belt where his lightsaber should have been. The woman who came to a stop before them was tall and bald, with snow-white skin and purple tattoos on her face and along the curve of her skull. She had a pair of curved lightsabers on her slung belts, and she watched the two Padawans with a predatory gleam in her eyes, a smile touching her lips.
"Hello, little Jedi," said Asajj Ventress. "My master is looking forward to meeting you."
Book 3, Nightfall.
Ready to start the conquest of spaces, reaching the starlight and silver fields. Come with the night, science of fighting the forces of gravity.
This one is a lot sketchier than Dark Bishop, since that used the setup from Gambit, but still has vast swaths of plot unaccounted for, including the ending. There would be substantially more going on than is mentioned up above, but while I plan a lot in advance, a fair amount of plotting is done on the fly as the situation develops, and I can fill in the ground between my keystone scenes. Some time has passed since the end of Dark Bishop, somewhere between several months and a year. By this point, Amidala has had her child. She spends all of Gambit and Bishop pregnant. It is possible that she gives birth during Bishop, but I'm not certain. No, I don't know the name or gender of the baby. Opening scene. Beautifully illustrated by Kavacat on Tumblr. Amidala arrives on Tatooine, apparently alone, to get a carbon-frozen Ani Skywalker back from Jabba the Hutt. Jabba mocks her by accusing her of being powerless, leader of the Confederacy in name only. The Naboo have a new ruler now. "I warn you not to underestimate my power," Amidala says, channeling her alternate universe son. Her power includes a single battle star in orbit and Luminara Unduli. Ani's rescue does not quite go as smoothly as she had hoped, but it does happen. Obi-Wan was not there because he was busy with the war. The Confederacy government is demanding him on the battlefield amidst panic that they have gotten themselves into a situation they cannot get out of. The Confederacy is in full panicked meltdown and on the edge of breaking up. It's basically only being held together by Amidala's strength of will. This is why it took so long to get Ani. It's the first chance that either Obi-Wan or Amidala could get away. The Jedi Order is back to falling apart. Ayla is so appalled by mind-wiped Quinlan. She never wanted this, never expected it, that she up and leaves to go join Obi-Wan's Jedi. Deepa is searching frantically for Caleb, but the Order just can't spare the resources to find a single missing Padawan between the war and the fact that it's falling apart. Barriss returns to the Confederacy Jedi. This is the first indication that any of them have that Ahsoka is missing. Ahsoka and Caleb are on Mustafar, while Palpatine and Ventress attempt to brainwash them into essentially becoming the vanguard of a Sith army. The ultimate insult to the Jedi. Padawans from the two main lineages in the Order. This has not been going as well as either Palpatine or Ventress would hope. They are mostly in Ventress's care. She's hoping to use them as weapons against Palpatine once the galaxy has sorted itself out. After all, by then they'll already be used to taking orders from her. This is not working well, either. Neither Caleb Doom nor Ahsoka Tano has ever been particularly good at taking orders from anyone. Thom and Thrasa reappear, having spent all of Dark Bishop MIA. It turns out that they were spying behind enemy lines in the Empire. Thom is absolutely appalled to find out that Quinlan has had Revan's cure used on him, and that Ayla has defected. Thrasa isn't too pleased about the fact that her line Padawan is missing. The situation on occupied Naboo is getting worse and worse somehow. Ahsoka and Caleb manage to escape from Mustafar and make their way back to the Confederacy Jedi, whom Caleb is wary of, but on the other hand, it's not like there's anything he can do about it. Obi-Wan contacts Deepa and Mace to let them know that Caleb is with them. They're not the ones who took him. Would the Jedi like him back? Yes, the Jedi would like him back. Mace and Deepa know that if they tell the Council about this, they'll set up a trap to try and capture Obi-Wan, which they don't want to risk because at this point it's clear that he's not the real threat. Something still being debated by the other members of the Council. And they're more concerned about the Padawan who was kidnapped by the Sith. The meeting is tense. The reunion is emotional. And then they all sit down to pool information about the Sith. The situation is a lot worse than either the Confederacy or the Republic expected. This is also pretty much all I know about Nightfall, which, never actually had an ending planned since I knew I wasn't going to write it. Here are a couple of other things that I do know, but which don't quite work in elsewhere in this format. At some point, Obi-Wan and Quinlan duel each other. I'm not sure if it's to the death or not. Rex never makes it back to the Wake baseline universe. There is no Order 66 equivalent. But the Jedi Order does end up schisming into a number of different groups. The largest group remains on Coruscant at the Jedi Temple, which is still considered the spiritual home of the Jedi. The Republic survives, but not intact. While it retains the Galactic Republic name, it's more commonly called the Galactic Remnant. The Republic and the Confederacy have to join forces to defeat the Empire. I don't know if any major characters die. I mean, presumably Palpatine dies, but I don't know how or why or at whose hand. I am not certain if the Empire survives the end of the story or not. Amidala does manage to regain Naboo. Jury is out on whether or not Tarkin manages to survive this experience. Obi-Wan, Amidala, Ani, Ahsoka, Caleb, and Rex all survive. The galaxy is substantially reshaped by the end of the story. But, hey, at least not everyone is dead, and there's not a Sith Lord in charge of everything. So that's definitely one up on Revenge of the Sith. So, that is the story of the 700,000 words that I am not writing. You'll notice that there are a lot of through lines from Gambit that aren't accounted for. What happens with Rex, for example, or Dooku. And that's because those are plot lines I never had Keystone scenes for, and so would have worked out once I started writing. I don't know what happens. I mean, I would have worked it out if I was writing these stories, but I'm not, so I don't know what happens. I hope this is interesting, if not as illuminating as most people were probably hoping for. The end. Ready to start the progress of spaces.
expanding between you and me. Come with the night, the science of fighting the forces of gravity. Ready to start the conquest of spaces, reaching the starlight and silver fields. Come with the night, the science of fighting the forces of gravity.
Reader's notes. Oh my god. How could you? Why would you do that to Quinlan Vos? He did not deserve that. Put it back. Okay, but we do know that when the Jedi Council, like Revan's cure, isn't exactly foolproof, and that it does, stronger willed characters tend to either have like a mind break in which they have a psychosis type personality splintering and then things come back, or else like terrifying trauma induced nightmares where they start remembering things. But either way, Quinlan may not be a complete vegetable, and also it's terrifying the fact that, you know, what did the Jedi program into him? I'm worried about him a lot. He did not deserve this. He needs nice things and soft pillows and for Ayla to come home, and then maybe they go have like a picnic someplace where nobody's gonna get damaged. But I'm going to pretend instead that Obi-Wan and Quinlan had a duel, not to the death, but to the unconsciousness. Obi-Wan knocks Quinlan out, they put him in carbonite, and then they do some while he's in stasis and subconsciously malleable, they work to undo the mind wipe and restore Quinlan's self, and Ayla feels guilty about it, so she's extra helpful. And then Quinlan wakes up, and everything's fine, because he did not deserve that at all. You made him my favorite character, Bedlam's Bard. How could you do this?
I'm ready to start the conquest of spaces, expand.